good morning slash afternoon slash evening, wherever in the world you are. This is Doug Farrar, editor of Touchdown Wire in the USA Today Sports Media Group. And the guy over there in the stripy shirt is Greg Cosell of NFL Films and ESPN's NFL Matchup. And Greg, in this episode of the X's and O's with Greg and Doug, we are going to continue our discussion of the schemes and concepts that are taking over the NFL for all kinds of reasons. And we've got two more today to discuss. And I want to start with a book that some guy helped write.
There we go.
Games of Change. Greg Cosell, Ron
Jaworski. I remember that.
Plow. If you don't have this book and you're a scheme dork like we are, my God, go buy it. It's really good. And there was one specific game plan that you discussed in the book, Super Bowl 36. The Patriots beat the Rams, 14-point underdogs. And it started the Patriots dynasty, for lack of a better word. And there was one specific word that kept coming up in Bill Belichick's game plan to start one of the most explosive, stop one of the most explosive offenses in NFL history. And the word that kept coming up was bullseye. So as we get into aggressive press coverage in today's NFL, which we're about to talk about, let's go back about 22 years and talk about bullseye, what it meant then, and kind of spin it forward to what it means now.
Well, you're obviously referring to the Super Bowl in which the Patriots defeated the greatest show on turf. And, you know, it's funny, those two teams had played in the regular season, as you may or may not recall, and the Rams won that game, and I believe Warner threw for maybe about 400 yards. It was a big number. I can't remember the exact amount, but the Rams offense really went up and down the field and threw the ball exceptionally well. So Bill Belichick was trying to really get a philosophical underpinning in his mind of what he felt made the Rams offense really work. You know, and everybody talked Warner. Everybody talked Marshall Faulk as a runner. Everybody talked Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt. They had Ricky Prohl. They had Oz Hakeem. This was an era when lining up with four wide receivers and spread type formations was not really something a lot of people did, but the Rams did.
Yeah. If you thought of the Dolphins today and like move that back about 23 years, people are like, what is this?
Well, what Belichick decided, which was really interesting, and of course it was, I don't think anybody saw it coming, was he pretty much decided that the foundational way to it, the key foundational piece to the Rams offense and their pass game was Marshall Faulk when he was offset in the backfield. Okay, so what he decided to do was have his outside edge players, okay, could have been Willie McGinnis, whoever it was on the outside. I just happen to remember McGinnis doing it a lot in the game.
Yeah.
But when Faulk was offset, that's the key thing. When Kurt Warner was in the shotgun and Faulk was offset next to him and he would free release into a route, what the Patriots did with their edge rushers was just attack Marshall Faulk and hit him to prevent him from free releasing into routes. Yep. And that, in the mind of Bill Belichick, was the key to what the Rams passing game could get accomplished. And obviously, you're not going to shut them down totally. They had a lot of good players and a really good O-line, but it really was effective. And obviously, they did not score a ton of points. And that's the key thing. It's points. It's not yards per se, but it's points. And that became known as the bullseye defense because he put a bullseye on Marshall Faulk when he was offset in the backfield. And he totally minimized Faulk as a receiver. And as people listening probably know, Marshall Faulk was one of the best receiving backs in the history of the NFL.
Yeah. That 99 through 2001 3-year stretch is one of the best seasons any running back has ever had and in all phases. I found it interesting that in that regular season game, the Patriots blitzed a ton, and in the Super Bowl, they barely blitzed at all. So they kind of changed their whole foundational format defensively. So when we move, we kind of spin this forward to now, and I want to talk about not – because there's press bail, there's sort of, you know, mirror match. There's different kinds of ways you can press receivers and follow them through the route. We're not talking about that. We're talking about Willie Brown – you know, Lester Hayes, Mel Blunt, get up in a guy's face and disrupt his routes. And I want to give you a couple of quick numbers. Last season in quick game, this is 0 to 1 step drops. There were over 4,000 dropbacks. zero to one step drops. Quarterbacks completed 70% of their passes, 6.15 yards per attempt, 149 touchdowns, 55 interceptions. Now, a lot of those quick drops are in red zone, so that skews the number. And six NFL teams, the Buccaneers, Dolphins, Bills, Broncos, 49ers, and Seahawks, had more than 200 dropbacks with quick throw snaps, those particular ones with those types of dropbacks. So it's a staple for a lot of teams. And the point here is that, and you and I have discussed this before, and I've heard you make this point here and on other shows, this much quick game in today's NFL, you're not always going to have time to get to the quarterback to even pressure him before he releases the ball, no matter how great your pass rush is. So if you can't disrupt the receiver's timing and his route stem and sort of where the quarterback expects him to go, your defense is going to have a lot of long days.
Yeah, and that's the chess match, Doug, because as you just pointed out, with those quick game throws, even if it's three-step drop timing, which is 1.5 seconds, not even one step type quick game out of the gun, but if it's three-step drop timing, 1.5 seconds and the ball's out, the pass rush will not get there.
Right.
So, I mean, you could not block a guy and he still won't get there. It's just the ball's out too quick. So how do you disrupt the passing game, Doug, if you can't disrupt the quarterback and impact the quarterback? You have to impact the receivers. So that's why playing press is become a really important part of the evaluation of corners coming out of college and the need to do that in the NFL. So now, obviously, offenses know that as well, and we've discussed this as well, and that's why you see a lot more motion, because what it's very difficult to press with motion, and that often gives receivers free access into their routes. But the bottom line is, not every team uses motion, as we know. We discussed that a week or so ago, and you need to be able to disrupt receivers to somehow impact quick game throws in the National Football League.
And you can also disrupt a guy if he like goes, you know, if he goes cross motion, he becomes your guy. Say you're in zone, or even in man, if you're trailing him, you can still beat him up, but it does become harder. There's one play that really stood out to me, and you and I discussed it yesterday, and we'll put this up on the video and in the article. This was Chiefs Chargers week 11, near the end of the first half. And this was the Chargers were in a 2x2 set, three strong, with Eckler to the right of Justin Herbert, Austin Eckler. And right out, he's running what looks to be like a Texas route, a quick angle route. George Karlaftis, the end, comes in and bumps Eckler off to his spot. Now, I don't want to say, exactly, and I don't want to say that Herbert's read was to Eckler, because I don't know that. It could be to the tight end. You know, it could be different things. It looked to me as if the tight end and the receiver to that side were going up into the end zone to clear things out for Eckler. That's what it looked like. So then Herbert has that to deal with, and all of a sudden the Texas route turns into a Louisiana route because he's all the way over to the right. It's a whole different thing now. And Karlaftis does that in the same way that a Willie McGinnis might have done to Marshall Faulk. So then Herbert looks to his other side. By now, he's pressured because that read is gone. So now the pressure comes in. He rolls to his left, and they're running a switch to the left, and Keenan Allen comes inside. Legarius Sneed, who played as like top five in press snaps among NFL cornerbacks last year, pressed up on Allen on a switch. So even with Allen moving, Sneed could disrupt his route, and that was a deflection. So there were a lot of things going on here. There was that bullseye thing you were talking about. It was a defensive end disrupting a running back. Very much the same thing. Disrupting the quarterback's read. Now Herbert has to turn to his left, and oh, crap, now there's pressure. Now I've got to roll out. And, you know, again, there's different kinds of press, but this aggressive press coverage, I think, is becoming a kind of a mandatory factor and a force multiplier for defense when you have this much quick game.
Well, there's a lot of things going on that play. It was, first of all, you're in the low red zone. And in the low red zone, you're usually not asking your quarterback to take deep drops and scan the field. So what happened was, is Herbert was reading to his right, which was the three receiver side, because Eckler was offset to the right in the backfield. They ran kind of a smash concept with the wide receiver and the tight end. The tight end was kind of open. We don't know why Herbert didn't throw that, if that was indeed his read. But then they, as you said, had Eckler on a Texas route, angle route, and Carl Loftus bullseyed him. Now, the other side, which, again, you're not really coming back to the other side in a strict sense because you're in the low red zone, but the Chiefs did a really, really good job in a press man look with the slot and the outside receiver of switching because it was kind of a switch release off the line of scrimmage by the two receivers. So you had a lot going on there.
This, by the way, was at the Kansas City 3-yard line. So it was a lot going on in a very compressed space.
Right. So you really don't have deep drops with the quarterback skating the field from the 3-yard line. So really, Herbert was reading the strong side of the formation, the 3-receiver side. But getting back to the general principle of press, there's essentially two kinds of press coverage, Doug. There's physical jam press, where the corner gets his hands on the receiver right off the ball and disrupts his release off the line of scrimmage. And that, of course, disrupts the timing of the route. That's one form of press coverage. Not a lot of corners are really well-schooled in doing that. If you happen to miss or don't do it real well, the receiver can run right by you and you're automatically in recovery mode. And no corner wants to be in that situation. The other form of press, which is used quite more often, is what we call mirror match press man. Yeah. So that coverage is where you don't get your hands on the receiver, but you wait for him to, you're still in press. You're still right up on him. You're still in press, but you wait for him, ideally with patience and poise, you wait for him to declare his release. And then you immediately lock onto, you either read his hip, your shoulder, it's taught differently, but you lock right onto him and you just mirror his route. And we call that mirror match press man. So they're both forms of press man coverage. Not many corners are really efficient or proficient at playing physical press man. And there's a lot more corners who are more comfortable playing mirror match press man.
Yeah, there's also press bail where you can be aligned to a receiver, then you go to a 45.
You back off as the ball snapped. Yeah, that's not really press. You're just showing press. You're showing the receiver press and you're showing the quarterback press. But when all said and done, you're not playing press technique.
Right, and you don't see it in college a lot. We were talking about Deontay Banks. We were talking about scheme fits for draft prospects to teams, and it's one reason I think the Giants found him so attractive because they press a ton, they play a lot of man, and they blitz. And Deontay Banks was, in my mind, the best press cornerback in this draft class. And like I said, it's not a huge list because you don't see it a lot. The other thing I think is interesting about this draft class of cornerbacks, and it's something else we've discussed before, I can't remember a class where I've seen so many cornerbacks 5'11 or taller and 190 pounds or heavier. I don't know if that was just it happened to be this time this way. But it seems like the evolution of the college game is growing these guys bigger and potentially more aggressive.
Well, it could be Darwinian natural selection here because receivers are getting bigger as well.
Sure.
So it could be a case, and we don't know that till we have a larger annual sample size. But you know, with receivers getting bigger, if you're playing against 6'2" receivers, 6'3" receivers who are 200 or more pounds. It's very, very difficult to play with 5'9", 5'10 corners. Now, there's always going to be an exception here or there, and we've seen through the years there have always been exceptions to that. There's corners who are shorter, who are physical, who are aggressive, who are tough, and they can match up to bigger, taller receivers. But you'd really like to be in a situation where if you're facing 6'2 receivers, you have a corner that's at least 6 feet tall. So we'll see if that continues. As I said, the sample size isn't large enough yet from the college ranks to say that that's a fact, but it would not surprise me if we trend in that direction.
Yep. Moving to, keeping with the defensive side of the ball, I want to talk about stunts, twists, games, whatever you want to call them, and there's just a lot of fun stuff there. I did an article in season about the way Dan Quinn, the DC of the Cowboys, is just diabolical and really intelligent with his stunts. And this kind of goes back to the quick game discussion and also the press discussion. You're dealing with a lot of quick routes, makes sense. You need to be able to drop your second-level defenders into credible coverage as opposed to deploying them as pressure players per se. You want to get pressure with, four is the obvious ideal. You know, the stuff that people were doing against Mahomes, you know, rushing three and dropping eight and all that. And one way that teams are doing, I think, more of this than I've seen in other years is the increasing use of stunts. The Eagles, for all the talk of their five-man fronts, they actually led the league with 49 solo sacks and 56 combined sacks with four rushers. The Cowboys had the NFL's most pressures with four rushers, 249. Chiefs were second at 243. Eagles ranked third with 238. The one thing those three teams have in common is they're really, really good with stunts. And I wanted to talk about this is another play we will detail on the video and in an article. This was Eagles against – this is a play you and I discussed yesterday. Eagles against the Steelers. This was one of Hassan Reddick's multiple sacks. I believe he had 21 total. Reddick starts the play, head up over the left tackle, and then he loops inside, and Javon Hargrave and Brandon Graham penetrate and sort of shift the line away from – they create that sort of loop gap for Reddick. And I found it interesting with the Eagles, with the five-man fronts they do run, it's you have the looper and the penetrator facilitates the gap for the looper. With the Eagles and their five-man fronts, they were using two guys to sort of blow half an offensive line up so that gap would be there. Just in a general sense, talk about what you're seeing from teams, different stunts and different pressures and different ways to sort of redeploy your defensive lineman after the snap to be able to create consistent pressure without sending extra guys, so those extra guys can then go into coverage.
Well, you normally see stunts or games, as they're often called, on third down or in passing situations. That's when you normally see them, when teams have their pass rush front. Now, as you suggested, more teams do line up with five down linemen, and that creates a really interesting scenario as far as stunts. And whether it's five down linemen or whether it's just five across, sometimes it could be four down linemen and it could be a linebacker, as we'll get to shortly. The Niners were very, very good at that. I'm using Fred Warner in that role as essentially a stand-up three technique on the ball. But that
two Eagles plays, two different plays, two different games, exact same concept.
Yeah, but the Eagles were they're a five-man front team. Now, the Eagles were not a big stunt team, by the way. They were at the lower end of the NFL in terms of stunts. So when they did it, it was often, I don't want to say a surprise, but it wasn't necessarily something that offenses went into their game plan approach for that week playing against the Eagles and said, hey, they're going to stunt a lot. They were not a big stunt team. And on the play you mentioned, Reddick, who's normally on the left side of the defense as an edge rusher, was actually on the right side of the defensive line as a stand-up three technique, okay? And what they did is they did what is called a long stunt, and that means that he's going to loop around two defensive linemen, not just one. Yep. And so those two defensive linemen, they crashed hard inside, bringing the offensive line down inside with them so that Reddick could loop around. Now, the key part of that with a five-man D line is the running back in the backfield, he is not looking at all at the defensive line because there's five D linemen, five offensive linemen. So it's man-to-man. He's looking for blitzers. He's looking for second and third level defenders to see if anybody comes from that level. So he's not concerned about leakage on the defensive front because it's five on five. So he ends up seeing that nobody comes from the second or third level, and then he releases. So when Reddick loops around, there's no one there to help out, and he got the sack. But getting to the other point, and one thing we see a lot of in today's NFL, which relates to a five-man front look, is what we call loaded fronts.
Yes.
Okay. And that means you have three defensive linemen to one side of the offensive center. You almost always see a stunt concept from that front look. I mentioned the Niners a moment ago. Yep. What they often did is they would line up in a loaded front and they'd have Fred Warner opposite the front as a stand-up three technique. Again, it's a five-man front look. And what they would often do is they would take Nick Bosa, pretty good pass rusher in his own right, 101.
Yeah, he's okay. He might have a future in this league.
Yeah, but he would end up, again, a long stunt. He would loop around the two other defensive linemen that were on the same side of the center. He would loop around, so he'd end up rushing through the A-gap in a long loop, okay? And the reason that they had Fred Warner on the line of scrimmage is so he could occupy the guard opposite the loaded front, because he's the only player on the offensive line who could help with a long stunt from a loaded front. So defenses are becoming kind of creative in how they want to rush the quarterback with their use of stunts. And that loaded front has become really prevalent in the league. Pretty much every team in the league lines up in loaded fronts now. They're very difficult because very often what teams do is the middle guy in that loaded front often is their best pass rusher. Often, not always. Like, let's say that's Aaron Donald, okay, just for the sake of discussion. Now there's a lot of room between Aaron Donald and the guard who has to block him. And a guard's friend is not space. So now there's a lot of space between someone like Aaron Donald and the guard. And if Donald just rushes right at that guard from distance, that's really a difficult thing to do. I had this conversation with an O-line coach who said those loaded fronts are really, really difficult.
Well, we'll also, of course, detail this play. This was in week 13 against the Dolphins. They ran this concept. They also ran it against Rams in week 4, I believe.
Yeah.
And here it's empty because they motion Raheem Mostert out to wide right. So Mike Gesicki, I mean, if they want to change the protection and, you know, deal with whatever, they could. But Gesicki is sort of chipping Dre Greenlaw at the second level, and then he's running a flat route. So he's out of there too. So Gesicki's out here. Mostert's out here, so now it's 5-on-5, and when you add that overload, then it becomes a real problem.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If it's going to be 5-on-5, and particularly, you know, the thing is when you line up in that five-man front look, whether it's five defensive linemen or five true pass rushers like the Eagles often do, or whether it's what the 49ers do where it's Fred Warner, and by the way, sometimes Fred Warner would just take two steps forward and back out and then drop into coverage, but he's still occupying the guard. The key is that you're trying to make it a 5-on-5, one-on-one situation for the offensive line, so no offensive lineman can help on somebody else. Because those two plays that we spoke about with the 49ers where Bosa took the long stunt, the long stick, as they call it, and came from outside from a wide nine alignment into the A-gap, looping behind two other defensive linemen, obviously, you know, there's nobody – no one in the backfield is going to be helping on that, even if it's not empty. So, you know, that's what you're trying to get accomplished. You're trying to make sure that no one on the offensive line can react to that long stunt through the A-gap.
Well, to this side, to the defensive right side, they had Bosa as the long looper. Then they had Charles Omenihu, who terrifically underrated pass rusher, who's now with the Chiefs, and Eric Armstead, who's also pretty decent.
Yeah.
So good luck with that. Even if it's one-on-one per se, it's our ones against your ones, and our ones are better. And then you sort of facilitate, you know, offensive line confusion with all these different looks, and, you know, then it's just double trouble.
And the two guys inside, you know, Armstead and Omenihu in this case, they're attacking gaps. You know, their job theoretically is they're penetrators. They're attacking gaps. The play is designed for Bosa. Now, obviously, if either Armstead or Omenihu can win, that's great. But they have to play with discipline and attack a certain way so that they make sure they occupy those offensive linemen. So that, let's say the center who's then responsible, I think Armstead was the furthest inside on the play you're mentioning. Armstead has to make sure that he occupies the center and the center can't come off him and slide back into the A-gap to react to Bosa. That's the number one objective for Armstead there. Armstead's role is not, hey, I'm going to get a sack. Armstead's role is to make sure that the center can't come off him and react to Bosa.
No, occupy is a good word because you see this on these types of overload plays. Omenihu and Armstead, they're not looking to penetrate. They're looking to move those guys out of the way. And the center reads it pretty well. He kind of peels off and tries to get to Bosa, but by then it's too late.
And that's the key. I mean, they're called penetrators because that's what, you know, what we have with stunts. And just as a quick thumbnail of stunts, there's multiple stunt concepts.
Yep.
And normally, but the way it is the first letter is the player that goes first. So let's say it's a TE stunt. Now we're talking two-man stunt as opposed to a long stunt. That means the tackle is the penetrator and the end would be the looper. If it's an ET stunt, the end would be the penetrator and the tackle would be the looper. Then there's TT stunts where it's both inside players. The Titans are very good at that in their sub fronts with Jeffrey Simmons and DeNico Autry when they come inside in their sub fronts, particularly when they're in dime. And they have TT stunts in which either Autry or Simmons is the penetrator and the other is the looper. They're very, very good at that because both those players are very good inside. And then you have those long stunts that we've spoken about, the one we mentioned with the Eagles, and those stunts from loaded fronts with the long stunt as well, where the looper goes behind two penetrators, not just one.
Yeah, the Cowboys are good with that too. But can I just say, DeNico Autry, he's so good, and we just don't talk about
him. Yeah, he's a very good player. He was good in Indianapolis as well. Yep.
And he's gotten even better now. Well, Greg, you are you're always great, and thanks again for the wisdom and the insight. And we'll talk more scheme and more cool stuff next week.
All right, Doug, thanks.